Now, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. How's the old gent with the gray hair?
He's fine. I just got a letter from my dad this morning.
In the 1930s and 40s, AM radio was king. The radio console was the centerpiece of the American family's home entertainment.
Dragnet.
We were working the night watch out of homicide. My name's Friday. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives.
But in the 1950s, there was a new sheriff in town, television. One by one, the radio networks moved their most popular shows to TV. And radio was kicked out of the living room. In order to survive, the medium would have to find a new place to hang out and discover a new way to attract an audience. But AM radio didn't die. It reinvented itself. Radio's second act was Top 40 Personality Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Scooter Seagrave Show from the Much More Music Station.
K-A-K-C, Tulsa.
5 o'clock at the Big Daddy Seven.
This is the story of one Top 40 radio station in Tulsa, Oklahoma, AM 970 KAKC. A station that dominated the local radio scene for nearly two decades. At times during its heyday, KAKC had more listeners than the other local stations combined.
Tommy James, Sean Dell, taking those mirages. Fellas, you better stay away from smoking those trailers. They get to you that way every time. Besides that, they stain your bicuspid. You're on the Scooter Seagrave Show, driving you home on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon in Oklahoma at 502 KAKC. Big Wheel Johnny.
97. K-A-K-C.
Long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile.
Scooter Seagraves. Scooter, of course, had been my childhood nickname since I was a small babe, so it wasn't really made up, but for radio purposes, it sounded like it was.
Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above?
It's Robert W. Walker. It was like I had joined the Beatles or something. I had become part of this band. The Big 97 DJs were a legendary force, you know, and there were only seven spots in that lineup.
How do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul?
It's Lee Bailey.
When I went back into Tulsa about 3 years or so ago, I signed an autograph for the gal who rented me a car. Now that is 40 years after my last show there.
Oh, and there we were all in one place, a generation lost in space.
Driving in Brookside to Pennington's drive-in restaurant, and every radio in every car would have KAKC tuned in.
How did KAKC begin? What were the dynamics of Top 40 radio, and how did this one station become such a phenomenon? Who were the people who worked at KAKC, and what do they think about their time there, looking back now? What led to the station's demise? And finally, what would it sound like if your favorite KAKC DJs were back on the air in Tulsa today, still playing your favorite music? Stay tuned.
Almost from the beginning, KAKC was a little station that could. Little because at 1,000 watts, its signal wasn't nearly as powerful as competitors like KRMG and KVOO, who, with 50,000 watts, blanketed the entire region. After dark, when KAKC reduced its power further to 500 watts, it was hard to hear the station clearly in parts of Tulsa and its suburbs. Dick Schmitz.
I think what we did was the excitement that they brought to it and the excitement that the disc jockeys generated. We just treated ourselves as though we were as big as the KVOOs or the KRMGs, and we weren't in terms of power and coverage, but nobody knew that. And if they liked us, they would do everything they could to listen to us.
Thank you. For the beginning of KAKC, we go to the oil capital of the world of the late 1940s, right after World War II, and a popular gathering place downtown called the Coliseum.
My grandfather, Sam Avey, which is A-V-E-Y, had purchased the Coliseum in Tulsa, which at the time was the only venue for events, graduations, sporting events, etc., in the city of Tulsa.
Avey's granddaughter, Sharon King Davis, is a Tulsa builder, developer, community activist, and fourth-generation Tulsan.
It was in an era where you didn't have television, you didn't have 200 channels to choose from, you had radio, and you had going someplace collectively with everybody else in town. So the Coliseum became a real hub and heart for the community of Tulsa.
Davis says her grandfather saw a radio station as a way to promote his Coliseum events.
When he purchased and started the hockey team, which was the Tulsa Oilers at the time, and he was the promoter of all the wrestling matches, which at the time was very good and respectable entertainment. I think wrestling has changed in the 70 years. He saw the advantage of having a radio station where he could broadcast some of this on radio and saw that there was one available.
So in 1946, with business partners R.W. Kello and longtime Tulsa broadcaster Glenn Condon, Avey applied for and received the license for an AM radio station with the call letters KAKC, which stood for the owners, Avey, Kello, and Condon.
The Tulsa Tribune, December 1946. KAKC, Tulsa's fifth commercial radio station, will begin broadcasting December 24th with a gala Christmas opening. The feature of the opening will be a two-hour broadcast of the Christmas party for children given each year at the Coliseum by Avey and his daughter Pat. Hourly news broadcasts, many handled by Condon, will be a feature on what is to be known as the Hometown Station.
As an independent station, meaning they did not rely on a radio network for their programs, KAKC broadcast wrestling and hockey from the Coliseum, and Tulsa Oilers baseball. Some of the out-of-town baseball broadcasts were in-studio recreations, made to sound like they were live from the game. For those, sportscaster Matt Krieger sat in the studio looking at the bare-bones description of the game from the wire service. Krieger created a colorful play-by-play broadcast using only his imagination and a few sound effects. To simulate the bat hitting the ball, Krieger would strike the table with a pencil. When he needed a crowd roar, he cued his engineer, who turned up the sound effects record. In September 1952, KAKC's studios were destroyed by fire when the Coliseum was struck by lightning and burned to the ground. However, KAKC never even went off the air. They broadcast from the transmitter site near 21st and Yale until new studios were ready in the American Airlines building at 910 South Boston. The Sam Avey era ended in 1955. When Avey and his partners sold the station.
Anytime I hear KAKC, there's always a little bit of something within me that makes me sit up a little bit straighter, because knowing how it was when it first started and that Grandpa was a part of that and Dad, and those wonderful memories of sitting at that little red table in the corner of my bedroom, listening to the music and to what was happening around Tulsa.
KAKC's next chapter was brief. On May 12, 1955, Reverend Forrest G. Conley, pastor of the Revival Tabernacle Church, purchased the station for $85,000. Under Conley's ownership, his sermons urged listeners to put their hands on the radio for healing and to send in money for healing and salvation cloths. But after just 1 year, in the summer of 1956, Conley sold the station to Houston advertising man Lester Kamen. What Kamen would do with KAKC in the latter half of 1956 would turn the Tulsa radio market on its ear. In 1954 and 55, a new style of music burst onto the scene.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock, we're gonna rock around the clock tonight. What's your glad?
DJ Alan Freed had given the music a name, rock and roll. For us baby boomers, born between 1946 and 1964, rock and roll became part of our generational identity.
Rock and roll was anti-establishment. Rock and roll was not something that that the ruling class, the adults, were into. It started out just like jazz or anything else as a pretty disreputable form of entertainment.
John Woolley is a Tulsa author and music historian who has chronicled Tulsa's early rock and roll years.
Well, the baby boomers started being born right after World War II, so you're looking at the high end of the baby boomers at by 55. They're around 10 years old, and the baby boomers also have more pocket money and things than their predecessors, and people are starting to pay attention to them, and this is a whole new thing. They're a little bit more mobile. There's a lot of things going on there, and they're the perfect audience.
At first, it looked like KTUL 1430, not KAKC, was going to be the station for rock and roll in Tulsa.
There was a disc jockey named Frank Berry, and he played what the folks called sex music. It was rhythm and blues.
Frank Berry's Rhythm Roundup aired on KTUL 1430 nights at 10 o'clock. Working alongside African-American DJ Berry was a young broadcaster who would later play a prominent role in KAKC's success, Harry Wilson.
Frank was just a phenomenon. He was an institution. I was his engineer. I played his music.
Good golly, Miss Ma!
He was phenomenally popular, and that was the very first indication that rock and roll was coming in, and it was going to take over.
But the KTUL DJ who made the biggest impact was the man who calls himself Tulsa's first rock and roll disc jockey, Don Wallace.
I kept track of what records were selling at Bill's T Record Shop. It was the record shop in Tulsa.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show.
Wallace began playing rock and roll in between the CBS network shows like Guiding Light, Arthur Godfrey, and Gunsmoke.
You can do anything, but they offer my blue suede shoes.
The rockabilly music was starting to come in, and nobody was playing it. But in spite of that fact, they were selling rockabilly. So I played Elvis Presley and the rockabilly stuff and the rock and roll records, and I got great ratings. After a short time, beat Joe Knight on KRMG, who was the leader in town.
Don Wallace, Frank Berry, and KTUL 1430 had a year and a half head start on KAKC in playing rock and roll. But KTUL management would not play the music, any kind of music, full time.
They were broadcasting a network program schedule, very much like the TV schedule today. So audience members would look up when the program they wanted to listen to was, you know, in the schedule, and they would tune in at the beginning of their program, and they'd, in theory, turn off the radio at the end of the program.
Meet Eric Rothenbuehler. He's professor of communication at Texas A&M University. Rothenbuehler has written about the origins of Top 40 and the total transformation radio made over about a 15-year period as the radio networks moved all of their shows and stars to television.
By the end of that period of time, radio is completely different. It's essentially what we know now, where every radio station or almost every station is formatted. And so they have a programming flow. So the radio station sounds pretty much the same every day, all day.
Unlike the network system that focused on individual shows, format radio is designed to build loyalty to that particular station.
They find the radio station that provides a style of programming that appeals to them or fits their lifestyle. Their attention to the station may come and go as their activities of the day come and go, but the idea is that they tune in to a station that they have a relationship with.
When radio left the living room, it went everywhere TV couldn't. As Americans became mobile in the 50s, the car radio became a constant companion. Transistor technology transformed portable radios from the size of a lunchbox to something you could slip into your coat pocket. Now, radio could go everywhere you did. And listening to the radio became a personal experience.
People really can't understand, especially kids can't understand, what an incredible impact radio was in our lives. But when it came along and all of a sudden these disc jockeys were talking to us and they were playing our music, it was an incredible thing.
Top 40 Radio was born in the Midwest, in Omaha, Nebraska, the brainchild of a young radio station owner named Todd Storrs. Storrs and his program director, Bill Stewart, built KOWH as an alternative to their competitors' network offerings. Storrs' strategy featured local DJ music shows.
He would build the show around the currently most popular songs, and he would play them repeatedly through the day. He figured if the audience is coming and going, the same audience member might not hear it, and so he would play the song again.
Professor Eric Rothenbühler says that Storrs also developed aspects of Top 40 radio, like constant on-air contests and News Live at 55.
He started experimenting with this in 51 or so, and by 53, KOWH was being written up in the national trade magazines as the highest-rated regional station in the country.
In 1953, Storrs expanded his empire, buying stations in Kansas City and New Orleans. In New Orleans, a competing station had a top 20 countdown show every afternoon. So Storrs decided to begin his station's countdown an hour earlier and extend it 1 hour later, making his a top 40 countdown. The term top 40 stuck as the name for the kind of station whose hallmark is repeated play of the 40 most popular songs. KAKC introduced Top 40 Radio to Tulsa in 1956. Dick Schmitz began working there just a few months after the new KAKC was born. Schmitz tells us the timeline of the launch and the original Big Five DJs.
August to September of 56, and there were five original DJs. John Trotter was the morning man. Rex Jones was the midday guy. Chris Lane was the late afternoon teenage bopper guy. Hillis Bell was the early evening guy, and then a fellow by the name of Ray Combs did the all-night show.
Round, round, round go the records. Out, out, out comes the music all around. Everywhere you go, you hear good music on the Dick Schmitz Show.
I showed up there in April of 1957, and then it was about 4 or 5 months later in September of 57 where they expanded the disc jockey staff because some of the people were thinking they were having to work too many hours, and they probably were, but not that hard, so they expanded it to 7 disc jockeys.
Round, 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 every corner, down, 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 every side street, all around, everyone you know.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
The other five Tulsa radio stations with their network shows never had a chance. Within a couple of months of coming on with Top 40, KAKC shot to the top of the ratings.
John Woolley in the Tulsa World described the KAKC juggernaut, and that's what it was. You were getting 24 hours a day of top 50, not top 40 in this case, but top 50 rock and roll music and first line breaking news whenever it was going to occur, and even faster if it was necessitated.
You ain't nothing but a hound dogger, crying all the time. You ain't
KAKC was not the original top 40, top 50 format station in the country, but it was one of the early ones. And it was the first one, even though there's been some contention from Oklahoma City that they were first, but I can tell you for a fact they weren't. The first station to do in Oklahoma City sent their people over to us to spend about a half a day with us, finding out how we kicked the thing off.
Schmitz is referring to what happened in 1958, when Todd Storrs, the inventor of Top 40, purchased KOMA in Oklahoma City, a station that would become legendary for its nighttime signal that could be heard in many western states throughout the U.S. Before Storrs could close on KOMA and take over its programming, WKY AM 930 personnel were warned about what would happen when Storrs put Top 40 on in Oklahoma City. At that point, only the smaller KOCY had tried Top 40 in OKC. So WKY personnel quickly scrambled to put Top 40 on their station, thus blocking Storrs' impact. WKY's Danny Williams consulted with Dick Schmitz and Harry Wilson at KAKC to make sure they got it right. Hired at the new KAKC as a mobile newsman, Schmitz quickly moved up, and within a few months, he was hosting the morning show from 6 to 9 a.m.
All righty, it's 20 minutes before 9, new KAKC Good Morning Time, 15 away from news time on Oklahoma's number one news station, the new KAKC.
Out of my 9 years there, or almost 9 years, I was probably on the air as the morning man for at least six and probably seven of those 9 years, from December of 57 until whenever, and then Harry was on, and then I came back on. And then as I left, I think Lee Bailey took over that morning show.
South Peoria. Well, it's 15 and a half minutes before 9. UKAKC, Good Morning Time. Glad to see you could make it for the Dick Schmitz Show. 59 degrees under cloudy sky.
By 1958, Schmitz added program director duties, which made him not only the morning voice, but also the behind-the-scenes guiding force during much of the station's early heyday.
We were constantly out in front of the people, whether it would be a roller skating race of some sort or some function to raise money for a charity, whether it be for the March of Dimes or whether it would be for any other charity that was needing some sort of help.
One time during March of Dimes month or week, Dick and I decided that I'd push a wheelchair from Claremore on US 66 to downtown Tulsa with a barrel in the seat of the wheelchair to collect dimes for the March of Dimes.
Happy Harry Wilson.
Right after we left Claremore, just to indicate the penetration that KAKC had made in the market in just all respects, we were going down 66, and it's not very far from what at the time was the Frisco Railroad. We saw a freight train coming. And they stopped. The whole dadgum train stopped. Engineers waved me over to the train, and they threw in some dimes into the barrel from the engine of the train and then took off and went on.
Jim Downing covered radio and TV for the Tulsa Tribune. The new KAKC had been on the air for 2 years when Downing devoted his entire August 9th, 1958 column, Downing Street, to KAKC.
Hooper says that more than 45% of the radios here are tuned to KAKC. Within the space of 2 years, the station has come from last place to first and has stayed there. Now, as much as I personally dislike Top 40 programming, I admire this radio station and respect its management. It's a station with a sense of humor. It's a station of vast public works, and most of its promotions benefit the community. And it's always promoting.
We were always looking to bring together as many people as we could in one particular setting or one venue. 1 year, for some reason, somebody came up with the idea, I'm sure it wasn't me, let's have an Easter egg hunt. Well, how big an Easter egg hunt and where? Well, how about for the whole city? And so we got thousands of plastic eggs and decided we'd promote an Easter egg hunt in Mohawk Park. And it was just a mob scene. No problems. It's just the traffic. There was no place to park, even with all the parking at Mohawk Park. It was just so many people, thousands. We had this Easter egg hunt for probably 3 to 5 years. It just got so big we couldn't continue to do it because we kept running out of places.
In 1958, KAKC hired a TU student who announced classical music and didn't really care for rock and roll, at least at first.
I was above top 40. I was too cool for that, and I was going to wake up and be another voice on KRMG and playing Montavani and things like that. But I started having some interest from hearing Clayton Bond and some of the things he said, a couple of things Danny Dark said.
Scooter Seagraves.
I am George Basil Seagraves III. Guess what that was supposed to be part of? A 3-line legal shingle in Central Arkansas, Seagraves, Seagraves, and Seagraves, and I was supposed to be that. Unfortunately, my grandfather passed away when I was in the 9th grade, and 2 weeks later, while we were up in his home for Dad to probate his will, Dad died of a heart attack, and so I no longer had the family pressure on, and I'd fallen in love with radio, and that's how it came out.
Seagraves started on the all-night shift while attending classes during the day.
I got to the point where I was down to about 125 pounds. If somebody would drop this cap like that, I'd turn around ready to fight. I realized also my grades were not going to be doing very well. I went to Dick and said, I love what you people are doing. I love doing it, but I'm really here to go to college. I can't do this. And he said, well, we've got a guy that's going to leave when his wife gets through teaching this semester. Why don't we move him to the overnight show? Could you do 9 to midnight? And for that reason, I got to stay at KAKC.
Thus started a love affair between Seagraves, KAKC, and Tulsa radio listeners. By his own count, he worked at the station 4 or 5 different times over 17 years, leaving KAKC for the last time in 1975. Most of his career, Seagraves worked in the afternoons. But while he was still working evenings, he got together with some of the other night DJs around town. They called themselves Knights of the Night.
Myself, Gary Chu, Mike Miller, Jim Hartz, and Milt Haynes, we hung around together. We got into doing a lot of silly things, including the playing of Percy Faith and Theme from a Summer Place in synchronicity, and all of us halfway through going, this song is so popular, I bet if you turn on any station in Tulsa, you'll hear it right now.
Time for us to continue with our super colossal, unbelievable Safeway Gun Brothers KAKC giveaway. We have another name to read to you. We've just drawn. The name
we
is...
were constantly running little contests on the air that didn't have big prizes, but just made people think a little bit and have a lot of fun. And sometimes the contest wouldn't let them think at all. We had a contest called Stop and Go, and it was based on an old Art Linkletter concept that he did on radio and television, where you'd start listing a bunch of prizes, and you were going to list good ones and bad ones and silly ones. And as you start listing these things, the listener or the viewer could say, stop. And when you say stop, then you get the next prize. Well, we would put these things on tape, and some people thought we were rigging that or finagling it with another tape, but it never did happen. It wouldn't happen. I think we had a great responsibility to our audience to be truthful and trustworthy and try to bring to our type of radio an integrity that some stations were missing.
Never was that sense of responsibility more evident than at the Teen Hops the station held for the kids.
Well, you can rock and you can roll and do the stop and even stroll it at the hop. When the record starts spinning, you chill it, so when you're chicken at the hop. Do the dance sensations that are sweeping the nation at the hop.
most prominent place where we had the dances for the kids was at the old Continental Roller Rink. If you know Tulsa on 11th Street, there are the Tracy Tennis Courts. And just to the west of that was the Continental Roller Rink. That whole area has been overcome by the expressway system. But that's where the Continental Rink was. And a lot of times we'd have it on a weekday night. And we would start it usually at 7 o'clock, and we'd be out of there at 10 o'clock, and the kids could get home. If they had studies, they still had time to take care of some of those.
Those dances sometimes featured live performances by nationally known artists like the Diamonds, Freddie Cannon, and in April 1961, Chuck Berry.
I had been warned that he might get a little bit racy, you might say, and I asked him, keep it clean, because we got these kids down here. That's our responsibility to look out for them. If their parents weren't down there, we had to do it.
All the cats wanna dance with sweet little 16.
Just a little before 10 o'clock, one of the disc jockeys came in to me. I was standing in the office with the man that owned the skating rink, Don Bromley. He said, well, so-and-so is getting a little bit racy out there. You might want to go hear what he has to say. So I went out and I listened for about a couple of minutes and heard him make a comment that I thought was not appropriate. So I made my way up past the crowd and got up to the side of the stage. And the instant that he finished that particular song, I walked up on stage. Okay, let's hear it for clap, clap, clap. And everybody started clapping and so forth. And I says, thank you. You've been a great show and we got to go home. And he was gone.
Many of those artists used Tulsa musicians for a backup band.
David Gates played so many dances for us. Interestingly enough, most of the time when David and his band would play, if I could pay him anything, it would be like $80 or $85.
When rocker Jerry Lee Lewis was booked into the Continental, Schmitz had another kind of problem.
He would play a piano, and sometimes he'd get up, he'd stand on it, he'd kick it with his feet or his heels, and he had a reputation for doing damage to pianos.
Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on.
And so when I started trying to rent a piano down at the Continental, I couldn't find anybody that would let me have a piano.
We ain't faking. Whole lot of shaking going on.
I finally found a friend who had a little blonde-colored spinet piano. He didn't know that Jerry Lee had this reputation, but I told him. I said, now, the word I have is that he has broken some pianos. And he said, what if he breaks mine? I said, then we'll stand good for it. When Jerry Lee came in to go and check out the piano and just try it out and get the feel of the room of the skating rink, I said, will you do me a favor? And he said, what? And I said, don't break my piano. You cannot imagine the trouble I had borrowing this piano, and I got it from a friend of mine. I said, play your heart out, but please don't break the piano. He said, I won't. And he didn't.
Oh, lot of shaking going on.
Just played the piano, had a great time, had a great show, and just had a wonderful time.
Scooter Seagrave says that in addition to the signature station events, like the 4th of July fireworks at Chandler Park and the Easter egg hunt at Mohawk, the Big 7 DJs were always out doing something in the community.
We had a thing back in the early years of the space program. They had one of the space capsules was coming around. It was like the Freedom 7 astronauts. And so we became, for that week, the Freedom 7 DJs and broadcast all week from a truck sitting right next to where they were set up, somewhere close to Central High downtown.
On the final day, Seagraves broadcast his whole four-hour show outdoors from that flatbed truck, outfitted with a small mixing board, microphones, even two turntables so he could play the records from there. They tossed it back to the station for commercials and the news.
Did the first hour, went back to the studio for the news, queued up the song that would come out at the top of the hour, went to use the porta-potty. Stopped coming out, talked to some people, and got back up, doing it very showbiz-like, getting up to the top just in time to hit the switch and turn on as soon as the beep sounded after Clayton said 12 noon or 1 o'clock or whatever. Unfortunately, when I hit it, nothing happened, and I looked over and almost had my first heart attack about 30 years early when I realized that 45 RPM record had melted into the turntable.
In 1962, At the height of KAKC's success, the station sold again. The buyer was S. Carl Mark from Trenton, New Jersey. His son, Henry Mark, says his dad had once been a rising radio star himself on the East Coast.
He was on his way to becoming somebody like Gary Moore or Arthur Godfrey. I mean, he had the voice of God, and he had an incredible amount of charisma. I mean, he was really just a born entertainer.
But Mark had given up his radio dreams for the realities of raising a family, working in the family business while keeping his eye out for a radio station to buy.
There was a station for sale in Tulsa, KAKC, and I believe it was on sale for about $500,000. I think what he did was he ended up getting a loan from his father-in-law for half the amount, and he ended up borrowing the rest. That was still a time when an individual owner-operator could cough up, $500,000 and buy a station, or at least get the loan for it.
Take good care of my baby. Please don't ever make her blue. Just tell her that you love her. Make sure you're thinking of her in everything you say and do.
Mr. Mark came in and supported pretty much everything that we were doing. He kept the same people. He didn't get rid of anybody. He really saved the station because Mr. Kamen, bless his heart, was trying to make this station in Iowa go, and it wasn't doing that well. Then he bought the station in Mission, Kansas, and it was not doing so well. And the word I got was that he was taking the profits from KAKC to sustain that other station in Iowa and the one in Kansas. And as a result, we were sort of hurting.
One of the first things Mark did was to move the station into its own building at a brand new state-of-the-art motel, the Tradewinds Motor Hotel, on the southwest corner of 51st and Peoria. Dick Schmitz did the first DJ show from the new studios in August 1963.
The first record I played was Hello Mother, Hello Father by Alan Sherman, which may have been the number one record at the time, but I played that, and the minute that the record finished, the general manager, a fellow by the name of Bob Hoth, came in, picked the record up off the turntable, and walked out with it. I never saw it again.
Then, one day, 30 years later, in the 1990s, Schmitz got a visit from Carl Mark, by then former owner of KAKC.
He said, I was going through that some of that stuff I carried out of KAKC years ago when he sold the station back in the early 80s, I think. And he said, I thought you might like to have this because I know that you were the one that originally had your hands on it. And I said, well, what is it? And he takes this paper sack out and he pulls this 45 record out in a frame with a little tag underneath it telling when it was played and on what the reason it was played. And it was Hello Mother, Hello Father. He said, this is the record that you played that first night when we signed on at the Tradewinds.
Wait a minute. It stopped hailing. Guys are swimming. Guys are sailing. Playing baseball. Gee, that's better. Mother, Father, kindly disregard this letter.
A typical DJ show on the new KAKC was 3 or 4 hours long, a fact that would sometimes give the impression that maybe DJs had it pretty easy. And what were they doing in between the songs anyway? Dick Schmitz and Scooter Seagraves take us inside the control room. Schmitz speaks first.
All our commercials were on discs. We had acetate discs that were just like a record. You had to get the disc out of a sleeve or out of a slot that was in a big wooden cabinet.
And each disc, it would say Pepsi Cola Disney Spectacular. That'd be disc number 103B. And these were in slots where you look down there. And, of course, you're throwing them in a hurry. And all of a sudden you look up, 103B is not there. And you finally find it in 13.
And then you had to go find another disc to play after that. And you had about 3 turntables sitting there working. And you're going from one to the other to the next.
You're queuing up your next song. You're calling the dispatcher. You're looking to see, oh, I haven't got the temperature yet. Yes, ma'am, what's the temperature at the airport? Thank you.
So you run a spot for client A, and you come in and give them the time. Run a spot for number B, come give them the new KAKC temperature. Come in and give a spot number C, and it was just constant.
And by the time the song was ended, you didn't have to sound excited and breathless because you were beat to death just doing what you did in between. There was no such thing as just sitting around and listening to your favorite Elvis Presley song.
It would have been easy to dismiss KAKC as that kid station, except when the ratings came out, it wasn't just kids listening. Harry Wilson.
The thing that caught the adults was our news coverage. That caused the adults to, just put up with the music they didn't like because they wanted to know what was going on.
If something would happen big in town, you see smoke anywhere, you'd turn on KAKC because you knew undoubtedly that we'd be on it.
That's the familiar voice of Tulsa TV icon Clayton Vaughn. Before Vaughn's long, distinguished career in Tulsa television, he was news director at the new KAKC.
But we did all of the easy stories, the stuff that was burning up and was bloody or was wrecked somehow, or very easy stories to cover.
That news was delivered in a rapid-fire style at 5 minutes before the hour, designed to get the jump on the other stations whose newscasts were at the top of the hour.
This broadcast is a service of Midwest Chevrolet, 8th and Cincinnati, Tulsa's quality Chevrolet dealer for 43 years, open nightly till 9.
Harry Wilson, KAKC News Center.
KAKC Radio News, reliable reporting at 55.
I was kind of the hawk of mobile news in Tulsa at that point. I just made it a practice to get there first, no matter where it was in Tulsa, whether it was on the far north side or the far south side, or whether it was a tornado that was in Pryor or wherever.
One of Wilson's favorite memories involves some of the local newspaper reporters trying to figure out how KAKC was beating them to local news stories.
The newspapers hadn't caught on to the fact that you could monitor, for example, the fire frequency and hear all the fire alarms. And they hadn't learned what are called the 10 signals. And if a fire chief gets to a fire and he calls in a 1022, that means it's a second alarm fire. Well, they never had caught on to that. So they listened to us, and slowly but surely, then their reporters, who were friends of mine, they began to realize how we were getting a jump on everybody.
When I was there, we had access to a plane, you know, fixed wing. But the signage on it was magnetic. It's like you slap on the side of your pickup truck passenger door, same kind of deal. And we just paid somebody for whenever we would need to use it.
The fact that KAKC sometimes used aircraft to cover the news was actually the setup for a little theater of the mind radio that Vaughn is now ready to let us in on.
Well, I have a confession to make, probably the first time I've ever done it publicly. Our studios were in the 910 South Boston building, which was the old American Airlines building. The building's no longer there. It was at 10th and Boston. And it was 8 or 9 stories tall. And we were on the top floor. The rest of it was office space. And we had a view of the Arkansas River to the south. That was still during the time that the Arkansas would flood because Keystone hadn't been built yet. We didn't want to go down and actually send someone down to the flood site. We would, but it would be much more exciting if we could get in an airplane and fly above it. So whenever we saw a light plane flying around over the, and you could see, you know, 10 or 15 miles, whenever we saw a light plane flying over it, we would use an airplane propeller noise sound effect, and the disc jockey would put me or somebody else on, and we're saying, we're looking down now at the Arkansas flood. We'd never actually say that we weren't in the plane, and so I suppose I have some defense of it. But you'd have to listen very carefully and understand that we were in a high-rise building and absolutely stationary.
Vaughn recalls the one story that was too big for his local news staff to cover.
The one story I remember, you know, better than any other was the Kennedy assassination. I remember seeing the thing come across the wire. And as soon as I could, I took a break and walked down to the general manager's office, and I said, you've got to get us a network. Make a deal, pick up the phone, find out what we have to do. I don't care what network it is, but we're going to look silly and stupid if we don't if we try to cover this thing ourselves with a wire service and looking at TV coverage of it. And to his credit, he did. So we just plugged into that and killed all of our programming, which was the way that we should have done it. And we stayed that way until, you know, for whatever it took, 4 or 5 days, I think.
In 1964, Vaughn moved to TV at Channel 6, leaving radio and KAKC behind.
I just had a really good time there. There were good people. We were doing a new thing. But the template under which we were operating, the charge under which we were operating, although it was never written out, was always, there are no rules for making it better. So try everything and have fun when you're doing it. And if you do that, then you're going to have a successful kind of operation if that's what you're doing. And it may not be that much different than in any other kind of thing, but I think it's absolutely true in broadcasting.
Bob Brown is another KAKC alum who went on to a career in television. Brown worked at KOTV Channel 6 with Clayton Vaughn before moving to Houston, Dallas, and later New York City. In an extremely volatile industry, Brown has kept the same TV job for 33 years as a correspondent on ABC's 2020. Growing up in Tulsa, Brown was young when he started in radio.
My nickname was Baby Bobby Brown. I was in high school still at the time I was working for KAKC, and I'm pretty sure that Scooter was the first one to use it, and it turned into something that I wound up using myself. Bob Brown is a very common name, so anytime you can add some spice to it, as Scooter did, it works.
Brown was mainly a disc jockey, but he also worked in news, sometimes simultaneously.
Because I worked the weekend and then the all-night shift, I was also my own newsman. So I had to listen to the music I was playing out of one part of my headset and listen to the police monitors out of my other ear.
When baby, it's you.
093. It'll be on the one side, baby, probably. You'll just come to the command post.
The most astounding thing about KAKC, especially in hindsight, was how dominant it was in the Tulsa market and how the ratings that it garnered year after year after year were beyond anyone's imagination in terms of the size of the audience that it attracted. And it did become a part of people's lives because you could be driving in Brookside to Pennington's drive-in restaurant, and every radio in every car would have KAKC tuned in.
And with the radio blasting, goes cruising just as fast as she can now. And she'll have fun, 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 till her daddy takes a T-bird away.
KAKC, first in Delta.
Brown was working at KAKC in the spring of 1964 when Beatlemania gripped the country.
I wanna hold your hand.
Dick Schmitz and I, looking at the promotional possibilities of it, took that first song that hadn't been much of a hit, but which was a Beatles song, From Me to You, and we recorded it as the Bugs and used it as a station promotion.
If there's anything that you want, if there's anything I can do, just call on me and I'll send it along with love from me to you.
I had marginal musical talent, meaning that I could play chords on the guitar. And if you listen to the recording, that's pretty much all that's going on. I'm strumming chords, and I think Dick and I may have overdubbed hand claps as the percussion on the song.
I got lips that long to kiss you and keep you satisfied. If there's anything that you want.
I think Dick played it on the air once as a kind of joke, and then he started to get requests for it. And as a result, we played it several times on the air, and then after we played it on the air, we started to get requests for appearances. Ultimately, we appeared with the Tulsa Philharmonic Orchestra in one of their regular concerts. Dick and I put on Beatles wigs, and so did other members of the Philharmonics. They took a photograph that appeared on the magazine section of the Tulsa World that week. And it exploded into something we'd never anticipated and turned into a terrific promotion.
With love from me to you.
Another trademark of Top 40 radio, or in the new KAKC's case, Top 50, was the weekly record survey. Dick Schmitz tells us how they compiled it.
We made weekly surveys of the record stores, and there were probably three or four here in town, but there was one primary one called Bill's Tea. We would survey the record distributors to see what they were selling that week. And, of course, they were always going to hype what the new stuff was, which we sort of took that with a grain of salt. We would do a survey of the two primary trade publications, which were Billboard and Cashbox, and try to get a feel for what they were showing as their top songs.
Through the years, the look of the survey changed. Scooter Seagraves gives us the evolution of KAKC's record list.
We put out the KAKC Pepsi-Cola Top 50 survey for probably the first 2 or 3 years I was there. It was a long, a legal length sheet of paper, just ran it through a mimeograph machine and put that out. Then later, we had the little double-fold Pepsi sheet with all seven disc jockeys' pictures on the front of it.
Then the Big 30 survey came out in 1967 when they cut back their playlist to 30 songs. At first, that one was a flat sheet with the word official diagonally on the page. Then in 1968, they debuted the trifold, which was issued in a different color every week. Those surveys, which were available in record stores and record departments at places like Woolworth's and JCPenney, have become collector's items. You'll find a link to a bunch of KAKC surveys on our website at publicradiotulsa.org/KAKC. Robert W. Walker started working at KAKC in 1965 while still in high school. Walker was introduced to radio through a program at Northwestern University the summer before his senior year at Tulsa Memorial. Shortly thereafter, Walker was hired in the news department at KAKC.
The job wasn't on air. It was clipping newspaper stories out of the paper and filing them. It was called a futures file. Some guy would get busted for burglary, and he was going to be arraigned a week from Tuesday. So my job was to cut that out of the paper and put it in a file so that a week from Tuesday they'd send somebody down to cover the arraignment.
Then one night, the 7 to midnight DJ failed to show up for work, and Walker got his chance. During much of his senior year, Walker went to school during the day and worked at KAKC at night, a job that changed his social standing forever.
I became a popular guy because I was the guy on the radio, you know, and they couldn't believe it. It was like I had joined the Beatles or something. I had become part of this band. The Big 97 DJs were a legendary force, you know, and there were only seven spots in that lineup.
Walker also hosted Tulsa's teen dance show, Dance Party, on Channel 6.
Pepsi Cola was the sponsor. And I remember there was a guy named Steve Hope, who was the honcho of that thing. I was marketing a promotion guy. And we had a meeting and I said, you know, you're the target here. You know, you're a young, hip guy, and we think you'd be a good representative for Pepsi and Dance Party. And would you be interested in doing it? And I was like, interested in doing it. How much do I have to pay to host Dance Party? And it turns out that it actually paid. I think it was $50 a show. So, you know, I was famous and quite well off.
One of Walker's young fans was a student at Bell Junior High who would, just a few years later, himself become a Big 97 jock, Bo Weaver.
I thought I worked at KAKC in the mid-60s because I had become sort of an unofficial station mascot. I was the guy that called up on the hit line and requested everything and entered all the contests and went to all the remotes and, you know, imagined myself to be next in line to be one of the jocks at KAKC. I didn't realize that that wasn't true, and since I didn't realize it, it eventually became true.
Weaver and Walker have remained friends through the years. Recently, the two of them got together to talk about their KAKC days.
One day, I went to one of those concerts down at the Civic Center. I think it was the Dick Clark Cavalcade of Stars or one of those things, and they had the local disc jockey bring Dick Clark out, and it was Robert Walker. And he walks out on stage, and the follow spot, you know, follows him out there, and he takes the microphone, says, "Hi, everybody, I'm Robert Walker from KAKC," and all the girls screamed, and some of them threw what appeared to be panties. And in that moment, I said, that looks like a good job to have.
Bo's story about the Civic Center concert, which I was actually the Monkees concert, and Jimi Hendrix opened. His story about seeing me on stage at the Civic Center and getting treated like a rock star brought to mind why I actually wanted to get into radio. I was at the Tulsa State Fair at age 11 or 12. And remember, they used to have this big, was it the Exposition Center or something?
Yes.
It was this big metal hangar, basically. And I walked in there. There was a big commotion going on at the far end. And I ran down there to see what was going on. And I came upon a throng of girls surrounding a guy with wraparound shades, a bank of lights beaming on him, playing rock and roll music. And it was Scooter Seagraves doing a live remote from the Tulsa State Fair.
I was at one of those remotes.
I realized at that moment, that guy's playing rock and roll music, surrounded by girls, and getting paid for it. Now, there's a job I could do.
Well, I can remember the little promos that would start off something like, "This Saturday, the Big 7 DJs are on the big move. At the Veterans of Foreign Wars Armory, it's Dick Schmitz." And, you know, his dance. And everybody was emceeing a dance. And just like the old drag race commercials of the era, at the very end of the spot, there was Seagraves going,
"Yeah, man."
And I remember hearing those spots and going, "Oh my God, I've got to be there."
I'm in with the in crowd. I go where the in crowd goes. I'm in with the in crowd. And I know what the in crowd knows.
In 1966, KAKC celebrated 10 years as Tulsa's number one radio station. But then, the unthinkable happened. KAKC was knocked from its lofty perch. That's coming up next week in Part 2. Also in Part 2, the late 60s and early 70s bring some of KAKC's best years, as well as the attention of the entire radio industry. Plus, three KAKC DJs disappear in a puff of smoke. And Tulsa's FM radio dial comes alive. Hear interviews with Lee Bailey, Jim Peters, Mike McCarthy, and Denver Fox. Then, the day the music died. That's next week on our original documentary of the week, Tulsa's top 40 legend, KAKC. I'm Steve Klim. Thanks for listening.